And I'm here talking to Mike Taylor from the Oxford Theatre Guild, who is directing an upcoming production. Tell us what it is.
I'm producing Dr. Faustus, Christopher Marlowe's Dr. Faustus.
And obviously, well, I think we can guess that the audience may have heard of it before, but maybe just give a quick rundown for people who aren't as familiar with the story.
We all know a Dr. Faustus. We've all got one in our lives. He's a know-it-all, a show-off. This is an academic. He's learned everything. Gets top marks in absolutely everything and decides that he just wants to go that little bit further.
Sounds Oxford appropriate, yeah.
It's very Oxford appropriate. He finds a book of spells, raises Mephistopheles and sells his soul to the devil, as you do, for the course of 24 years. And he makes this lovely long speech about what he's going to do to the world and all his hopes and ambitions. And the play is about what happens to those hopes and ambitions and how his journey around Europe and what happens at the end of the period when you've sold your soul.
I see, so it's about consequences and sort of bit of dark bargains and that sort of thing.
Absolutely, it's a very human story. I think the analogy that I often use with people is to say, talk about the internet. We live in this period where for the first time in human existence, we can know pretty much anything you want to know. It's all out there. We have the capacity to be infinitely wise, or as close as infinitely wise as humanity has ever been able to do. And instead of which we spend all our time looking at cat pictures and GIFs and all the other things that make up.
I think you've been looking at my browsing history.
That's really... Not the in private, but...
So the sort of deal with the devil is modern technology sort of thing. Is it modern society? Is that so that's sort of the undercurrent of your...
Yeah, for me, although this play is over 400 years old, for me, the thing that Marlowe got absolutely on the nail is exactly how people behave when they are given infinite power and infinite wisdom and all the possibilities in the world. You know, that we have this natural instinct to... Mm-hmm. Rather than to rise to the stars, to sink into the mud. And that's what happens to our Dr. Faustus.
Because a little bit about the play, obviously, I'm looking forward to seeing it properly produced. But sort of things like he goes off to see Helen of Troy and that sort of thing, doesn't he? You know, sort of seeking his most base human impulses.
That's right. He actually keeps returning to the theme of lechery and lasciviousness. Hmm. I think three times in the course of the play, he sort of puts it all out there. And Marlowe wrote, had a good line in Filthy Jokes. One of our actors has a degree in literature from the period, and she keeps taking me aside and pointing out the filthy jokes that Marlowe's slipped in there, the innuendo. And the thing is that over 400 years later, obviously what we know, what our use of language has changed. We no longer, for example, find it funny that Dutch people wear loose trousers, thing that Shakespeare jokes about.
Really?
Over and over and over again.
Why is it that Dutch people were famous for wearing loose trousers?
No idea, but they all had loose slops, which is...
Okay.
You know,
the sagging pants of the Elizabethan era, clearly.
Clearly, yeah. I did read a footnote on it, but...
it's glad to know that you've researched well for this piece. So, obviously, it's a period piece, and I suppose often a lot of plays stage in Oxford, especially Elizabethan Jacobean drama, very much... done in the style of the time, period costumes, but you're going for a bit more of a kind of modern staging, are you?
Yeah, Dr. Faustus has been described as being a play that has a beginning and an end and a muddle. The beginning and the end, which are, I think, probably the most important parts of the play in terms of telling you about Dr. Faustus's story. That is set in the modern time, the contemporary time. The language hasn't been updated, we're not changing the language at all, but nevertheless, the setting is something which is very familiar. What people refer to as the muddle, which is the middle, is a series of scenes, some of which were probably written by Marlowe and some of them probably weren't written by Marlowe. There's a tendency in a lot of productions these days write new ones or eliminate some of them. In fact, we're using the more orthodox middle bits. Those bits are period.
Right.
They are very, very period, though. I mean, it would be very difficult to try and make sense of those in a modern setting. Mm. So I'm treating them very much as if they will look different, they will feel different, the direction is different. They're very much being treated as if they were sort of the best bits. Faustus has 24 years of gallivanting around Europe with Mephistopheles, and it's boiled down to 12 or 13 minutes in the middle of the scene. And we're separating that those out. We're keeping them different.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds fantastic. And you mentioned Mephistopheles. Obviously, the sort of devilish, the diabolical element is one of the most popular things like that. I suppose if anyone ever knows anything about Faustus, they know that you have this brilliant scene where the seven sins get trotted on. Have you had fun sort of staging those bits?
Yes, that started off as being... I think it's probably one of the most complicated scenes to deal with. You have on this stage Lucifer and Mephistopheles and Beelzebub. And actually having those three powerful personalities on stage is quite difficult to cope with, as well as having all the seven deadly sins. But as you say, parading themselves and trying to persuade Faustus of the wisdom of going for these things. I had a lot of fun with that scene, have revisited it quite a lot, a number of times, to treat it differently. It's the last scene in the interval, so... And it's the scene that precedes Faustus's mad jaunt around Mephistopheles. So it has to let you go out with a bang, and I think that our Lucifer and our Beelzebub and our Mephistopheles combine very nicely to really set that scene off with a bang. It makes me howl with laughter.
Brilliant, there we
Every
go.
Every time I see it.
Despite all the devilishness on stage.
Marlowe knows how to write a very funny play, and Christopher Marlowe's Dr. Faustus is a very funny play. It is, of course, a very serious play, and one of the most difficult things to challenge a director is being able to be funny in the funny scenes, be serious in the serious scenes, and to be able to transit, the particularly making the transit from comedy to serious is a very difficult thing to make. So we've got a lot of original music, which Chris Bain has written for this production. I've got an excellent lighting designer in Michael Howe, and we're combining effects, pyrotechnic effects and regular effects, smoke machines and so on, to make the transitions from comic to tragedy telling, and to communicate well with the audience that we're making the transit from the one thing to the other.
Sounds like a fantastic production piece. I'm sure that Marlowe would be at the very least impressed by the pyrotechnics. I'm sure by the staging as well.
You know, Marlowe wrote the debating point whether Marlowe wrote the stage instructions in the play. There are great stage instructions in the play. There are things such as enter various devils throwing fireworks, etc. There's a hot whore. There's all sorts of cracking characters who come on to this thing. Contemporaneous accounts of Faustus talk about people having hysterics, and there being stampedes, and hysteria, and vomiting, and fainting. And okay, so I'm not. I hope there's not going to be any vomiting or fainting.
But the hysteria would be welcome. To a certain degree.
Absolutely, and a small stampede, as long as it's not towards the drinks at the interval, would be not entirely unwelcome. This is a very visceral production. People had huge reactions to it. This is 1604. He has a scene where he is abusing the Pope.
Always
popular to abuse the Pope. It's still a common sport these days. But you have to set it in terms of the history at the time, where the Protestant and Catholic churches were, and how people in this country felt about Catholicism. And we're trying to recreate some of that visceral reaction that people had. That reaction is what really turned me on to Faustus in the first place. Right. The fact that you have a play that's over 400 years old that still has the capability to shock, to upset, to make people roar with laughter. I think it's an enormously powerful piece, and I have been passionate about this play for years. I've seen many productions of it. A lot of them are very serious. It's a lot of very serious dance, a lot of very gloomy moments. And yeah, there are certainly gloomy moments in this play, but it's also a play that's there to entertain. And this play entertains, and it entertains by the bucket.
Obviously, it's on quite close to Christmas. Was there any seasonal reason there? Is this an antidote to all the kind of jolly pantomime that people might go and see?
When I thought about doing this, and when I took it to the Oxford Theatre Guild as a possible project, I didn't know which venue it was going to be on, and I didn't know when it was going to be on. It was going to be October through to December. So it's a very open play, and I had so many different ways. I had 101 good ideas, possibly 201 good ideas. And I'm one of my mantras through this production has been that having those ideas is a critical part in any director's suitcase. Being able to weed those ideas out and be able to deliver on the ideas that you end up choosing, these are all important steps. You can make a mess of a play by having too many good ideas. So the fact that we're the week before Christmas has meant that the ideas that I am taking onto the stage are ones that people are not going to find out of place at the festive season. Other than crucifying popes.
And so it's always nice to have a good Christmas message in there. You know, a bit of Christian iconography never goes amiss, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's the play is about theology. It's something that I often remind the actors that people believe wholeheartedly in spirits and souls. Mm. We now live in a society that is, if not atheist, is largely agnostic, and it's very easy to make light of what people's beliefs were. But when Faustus talked about selling his soul, he absolutely meant it. Mm. He refers to this in the text as he talks about the possible outcomes of it. He hopes that he's going to be able to be in hell alongside Mephistopheles and Lucifer. Mm. He certainly casts himself. He talks about, can I rule in hell for 1,000 years, 100,000? We know from the way that Mephistopheles looks at him that he is just one in a very long list of people who have been down this route. Mm. Mephistopheles communicates this very well, but the message doesn't go into Faustus's head.
Right, I see. And because I think it's really interesting that you're focusing on the theological angle, obviously very powerful for audience at the time, indeed today. Mm. And yet many people say that Marlowe may have been an atheist, or certainly flirted with kind of atheism, perhaps to shock. But do you think there's any element that's sort of satirising this kind of religious fervour in the play?
That's certainly the case. Mm. The whole play, from that point of view, doesn't take it seriously. What it asks us to do is to believe that Faustus takes it seriously.
Ah, right. Yeah.
That's a very good and a very clever thing for a playwright to do. Mm. Because they can both say, on the one hand, it is my intention to take this seriously. Mm. And they can also say, this is not my intention to take it seriously. This is my intention is to make you laugh at it. There aren't many playwrights that really hit that. Mm. In the modern world, I would say that Pinter is one of those playwrights that manages to communicate multiple messages at multiple times. It makes it for a very engaging text to read and to witness. As I say, I've seen this play many times. I think you can do it badly, but I don't think there's a wrong way of doing it. I think that's a really valuable thing to take out of it, that it should be a play that you go away from thinking about, as well as having closure. It's not a pantomime. It is entertaining, as some pantomimes are, but it should be a play that provokes and shocks and makes you laugh. It should turn you inside out a little bit.
It sounds very compelling indeed. Is there anything that you wanted to highlight especially that we haven't really touched on?
One of the things that I wanted to do was, at the outset, was to have a female Mephistopheles. Okay. This is not an original idea. There is a very poor film with Elizabeth Hurley cast as Mephistopheles. I won't even tell you what the title of it is. Don't watch it. This has got nothing to do with it. One of the first questions that Bailey Eilly, who is cast as Mephistopheles, asked me was, how much sex do you want in it? Hmm. I said, absolutely none whatsoever. And she was very, very happy about this. Male-female relationships are not just about sex. It's not just about sexual politics. I went into this play saying I wanted to have a female Mephistopheles, and I was wide open on what kind of relationship we were going to have between Mephistopheles and Faustus. Mm-hmm. For example, I would have been very happy to have cast a woman in her 60s, and perhaps we might have had a nanny-ish Mephistopheles, we might have had a school-marmish Mephistopheles, we might have had a mother-in-law Mephistopheles. I don't really want to go down the Les Dawson route, but these things were possible. I had a young woman audition for me in her late teens, and she made for a very entertaining, annoying younger sister, Mephistopheles. So we have all these different kinds of relationships. Actually, as it turned out, I didn't have any older women audition, which I was really disappointed about, given that one of the things you often hear about is that there aren't good parts for older women. But there we go. Bailey, who I have cast, well, you're going to have to come and see it to know what kind of Mephistopheles she is.
You're going to keep something back from the audience.
I am indeed, yeah. There's no sex, which is kind of an important thing for me. Mm. The relationship that she has with Faustus puts the hairs up on the back of my neck. I actually forgot I was directing it yesterday in rehearsal. I was completely and utterly engrossed in their performance.
That's a very powerful recommendation indeed. I think it's really interesting, because I've said this a number of times before on the podcast, is that the Oxford Theatre Guild, you know, of course you're not a professional company, you're not professional actors mostly, but at the same time, I have been to see productions where they were better than many a professional production that I've seen, and I think it's incredible. There's such a great pool of acting talent in Oxfordshire.
We're very lucky. Mm. As it happens, both my leads work professionally as well as working with the Guild and with other non-professional companies. We've been at this in the rehearsal room since the end of October in this play. We had text workshops beforehand, something I'm very keen on. As well as having a full-time job, I work on this. I have been working on this 30 hours a week. We have over 20 hours a week rehearsals. My leads have more time with me than that. Mm-hmm. We are an amateur company, as in we are not a professional company. But we and other theatre companies in Oxford take our responsibilities to deliver first-class theatre absolutely seriously. With other companies I work for example, when I work with my own company, 11-1, we do plays that are off the beaten track and you couldn't do professionally because there are too many challenges, they are perhaps esoteric, but if you can't do plays like that in Oxford, then where can you do them? So there's quite an overlap between what is amateur and what is professional. Mm. I think, actually, that the gap in amateur from the school hall, the sort of the nativity school or the school production, through to productions where you have professional actors and other professionals working in a not-for-profit basis, that is as a wide gap as it is in the professional area. So you have people at the bottom who will work maybe once a year and who are scrabbling to have any kind of career whatsoever, despite being amazing actors, despite being trained for years. And at the top, of course, you have the Dame Judys and the people at the absolute top of their profession. And there is a huge gap between the top and the bottom of the professional market and the top and the bottom of the amateur performers too. And there is a really big overlap.
Well, that's very well put indeed. If you wanted to just sort of leave people with one thing, say, if this hasn't convinced you, I don't know what will, but one thing to pull people along and say, come, see this, what would you say?
This production of Faustus is thought-provoking, it is visceral, it is exciting. There are smoke, there are flings, there are bangs, there's music, there's spectacle, there's knob gags, there's souls being sold, there's... I mean, how many plays can you say where there's Lucifer and Beelzebub and Mephistopheles all on the stage competing for attention? This is a play that has pretty much anything you want out of any play at this time of the year.
Amazing. And also a discussion of human nature.
Well, if you want that, then yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Theology up to the knees in it.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
My pleasure.
Well, why don't you tell us when and where people can go along and see it?
The play is on the old fire station in the centre of Oxford on George Street. You can buy tickets from the Oxford Playhouse and on their website, ticketsoxford.com. It's on from December the 17th to the 21st. It's on at 7:30 every evening, and on Saturday afternoons, 2:30.
Thank you very much.